You're listening to the Corner House podcast. Visit the Corner House website for listings and more.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Corner House podcast. I'm Dave Petty, AV technician here at Corner House, and I'll be your host for this month. Joining me, as always, is podcast regular Andy Willis. This month we'll be talking about hard-hitting cop drama, Police. Our film programme manager, Rachel Haywood, gives us a rundown of her top five films from Cannes. We preview two upcoming events in June, the Abandoned Normal Devices Festival and our film season, Anthony Burgess and Cinema. Plus, there's our What's On guide with top tips for culture and entertainment in Manchester this month. So, without further ado, let's talk about Police. This is director Mei Wen's third feature. It won the Jury Prize last year at Cannes. It's a film that stems from Mei Wen's research into the child protection arm of the police in France, following the branch on a number of cases, the multiple storylines drawing a few critical comparisons with The Wire, or if you're Peter Bradshaw, The Bill. He obviously wasn't as keen on it as the Cannes jury. That said, critical reception has largely been fantastic, but Andy, what's your take on Police?
Well, interesting. I think it really does, has divided critics. And you said the Cannes response was mostly positive, but I believe there was also people who booed at the end of the screening in Cannes, as well as championing it. So it won the jury prize, and yet people booed. I think it is a film that will divide audiences. I have to say, I felt, for me, it was a little bit familiar territory, and it wasn't hard-hitting enough. So to cover this kind of very serious issue, I have to say, Peter Bradshaw may have compared it to The Bill, but I was comparing it to Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Okay.
And it did remind me of those kind of stories, but I actually found it a little less hard-hitting than Law and Order, a mainstream American TV show. And I think part of the problem for me, or part of the reason for that for me, was the fact that it was too bitty. You never really got to understand either the characters, the police characters, there was too many of those, or particularly the victims. And so I felt pretty cold about what was going on. I didn't feel a lot of sympathy and empathy for the victims because they were in front of our eyes and gone. Now, I suppose that's what she was trying to show in terms of the way that the police are not able to become emotionally involved because everything's moving so quickly and there's so much pressure on them. But I felt, as an audience member, you know, I wanted a little bit more of an anchor to hook me into the dramas.
It's a long film. I mean, it's 2 hours plus, and it, as you say, there's a hell of a lot that goes on. But at the same time, the amount of drama that they do try to cram in, you get a taste for it, and you think, oh, right, so, you know, there's such and such happening with one case. You know, there's a lot of hard-hitting cases within the first 10, 15 minutes, and then they're kind of thrown away, dispensed with. But as far as I'm aware, that is to do with the fact that the police don't actually get to know verdicts on cases, etc. So it is playing on reality, but in the same sense, you want to know more, you want to get involved in these characters' lives. I mean, it's not just the cases they're working on, it's stuff that's happening at home. So, you know, domestic issues with certain characters. It never really develops like you'd want it to. And for a film that's 2 hours plus, that sort of is a bit of a shame. I thought there were some great moments in it, some great moments of drama, but then you've got points where the police are doing screeching noises when they're, you know, pulling a handbrake turn. And that's sort of really at odds with the rest of the tone of the film, I thought.
For me, whilst there was a lot I liked in the film, so I don't want to be overly critical, because I did find that the pace of it was quite engaging. But I found that it was a fatal flaw, I think, with the director playing one of the central characters, a photographer who's been assigned because of her connections to take photographs of the unit, and it really felt shoehorned in. It felt overly conventional to have that character, and she didn't really, for me, assume our role, you know, and take us through the story in the way that you might expect that kind of character jettisoned into a close-knit unit. And so that seemed to a little self-indulgent, I think, you know, creating a nice part for herself in the film. I could have done without that, and I think it might have worked a little bit better then with its observational documentary visual style, as if, you know, that kind of technique of as if there was a crew following them rather than her not really following them but following them, and it never really seemed to decide what it wanted to be, that character. But as I say, having said that, I think there is enough familiar faces from French TV and film to draw you in. People who like crime films generally, and particularly French crime films, I think will enjoy it because it's got a different spin, because it does focus on child protection rather than, you know, drugs or vice or the more traditional crime film settings. So there's enough there, I think, for people who enjoy this type of film to get something out of it. I just felt at the end of the day, for me, it felt like a wasted opportunity. I was really looking forward to it, and I felt a little bit deflated by the end. But that might just be because I had such high expectations.
So I came in with it with no expectations whatsoever. So for me, as I say, parts of it worked, parts of it don't quite work. But I don't think that's a detriment to the film. I mean, it's got a lot to offer. Yeah, I mean, and at the end of the day, it sparks debate, which is what, you know, any fairly decent film should do. Booking is now open for Police, and it's screening from Friday, 15th of June. Cornerhouse film programme manager Rachel Haywood went to this year's Cannes Film Festival to scout out the next big hits. Here she is reporting back with her highlights.
I had a really hectic time in Cannes. I had a really busy week watching around 40 films, and it's been hard to pick 5 highlights out of that, but I think I've managed it. I'm a really big fan of the film which won this year's Palme d'Or, Michael Haneke's Love. This is a very tender love story about an elderly couple and about their relationship and about how they cope together when the woman has a stroke. And throughout the film, you see how she and her husband cope with this really debilitating condition. The two lead performances are absolutely incredible. They convey the emotion and the relationship between this couple so, so well. There's not a dry eye in the house when you're watching this film. In particular, Emmanuel Riva as Anne is just stunning. Moving on to the next one, absolutely equally powerful in terms of emotion, is a Romanian film from Cristian Mungiu, who is the director of 4 Months, 3 Weeks, 2 Days, another Palme d'Or winner a few years ago. And this is a tale of friendship, of love, of unrequited love and forbidden love. And it's also about an exorcism that goes horribly, horribly wrong. And continuing with the rather dark theme of the kind of films that I enjoy watching is Thomas Vinterberg's The Hunt. This is a really tense, taut drama about a very small, close-knit community where when things are going well, they're going very well. When they turn bad, they go very ugly. And the film follows the story of a recently divorced primary school teacher who is accused of sexual abuse. And very, very rapidly, the adults and the children in the town where he lives turn on him. And the film follows his relationships and the destruction of his relationships with his former friends and colleagues. One of the films I particularly enjoyed outside of the competition is a film from Senegal called La Pirogue. And this is a story about a group of refugees who want to leave Senegal. They want to start a new life ultimately in Europe, although they take a very, very long route to try to get to Europe. And the film tells the often sad yet sometimes uplifting stories of their individual journeys. So in some ways, it's quite a predictable story. This is by no means, it's not a new thing. But the way that the film has been executed is very impressive. The actors are very good and the stories and the emotions really come through. And lastly, one of the final films that I saw during the festival was a British film called Sightseers. And this is from Ben Wheatley, the director of Kill List. And very much in contrast both to Kill List and the previous films I've mentioned, this film, Sightseers, is a real laugh-out-loud comedy. It's a very dark comedy. It's about a couple, fairly new, not quite so young couple, who go on a camping holiday and ultimately go on a killing spree. It's really a very funny film, very typically British humour. It's been compared to everything from early Mike Lee to Carry On films and pretty much everything in between. It's one that I really, really liked. It definitely lifted the mood, so no more miserablest dirge. I definitely recommend Sightseers.
If you want to hear more about this year's Cannes Film Festival, you can read Rachel's blog on the film section of our website.
You're listening to the Cornerhouse podcast. Visit the Cornerhouse website for listings and more.
The Abandoned Normal Devices Festival, or AND to the well-acquainted, returns this year with a boundary-pushing programme of art, digital culture and new media. The full festival takes place later this year from 29th of August to the 2nd of September, but before that kicks off, a preview weekend is taking place in June. Here's AND Festival Manager Gabby Jenks to tell us more.
Abandon Normal Devices is a festival of new cinema, digital culture and art. It's an annual festival that takes place every year and alternates between the cities of Manchester and Liverpool whilst delivering a regional programme across rural areas. This year we are taking place in both Manchester and Liverpool, and we launch with two exhibitions, one at Corner House with Stania Khan's first UK solo show, I'm Cool, It's Good. And in Liverpool, we have a new collaboration at FACT with the Brazil-UK theatre company Zucora Ura and two media artists, Alistair Aylbeck and James Bailey. So Stania Khan is a show that really explores the challenges of what success means in a really comic and dark way. And the Humble Market is really a counterpoint to mass consumerism. So it's a part performance, part experience. It's definitely not really an exhibition. And it brings audiences on a choreographed journey through different spaces of the building. And it really asks you, what is it that you really trade? So it's going to be a new challenge for both FACT, in the sense that they've never done a production like this before, and it's a really good example of the kind of work Anne is interested in commissioning. So both of these exhibitions are kicking off our launch and preview weekend, which will give audiences a chance to get an idea of what's happening over the summer, but also the key festival dates, which are this year, the 29th of August to the 2nd of September. And during this weekend, we will have the world premiere of Swan Down by Andrew Cotting, which is a really great example of an artist responding to the Olympics that's currently happening this year, which is a real Dada-esque response to some of the values that the Olympics propose to do with perfection. And it's a real poetic reflection and journey from Hastings to Hackney. Following this, we will have the UK premiere of The Creator by the artistic duo Alan Al, which is a homage to Alan Turing, and will be taking place as part of many events that are happening in Manchester related to Alan Turing. It is both a fusion of what they're most famous for, which is CGI, as well as adopt some of the methods of David Lynch in the sense that it's a real psychological journey into the life of Alan Turing. Okay, so the festival tends not to have themes, but we like to start a conversation with artists and filmmakers about certain ideas. And it seemed appropriate that in 2012 we would talk about success and what success means to us. And one of the things that came back, we had very different responses, was that artists often take risks in ways that normal practitioners don't. And we really value risk in terms of creativity and in terms of the way that we commission. So we feature lots of projects that are both ambitious in scale and are about testing artistic parameters. But we also feature artists who claim failure as a creative space. So as part of the festival, failure is one of those things we celebrate. We have an artist who works with broken machines, glitch technologies. And alongside this, we have artists that are proposing solutions to some of the challenges that we have. Success is definitely an ideology, something that we aim for. And we have artists proposing alternatives to this. So you might be asking why we're doing a preview event as we've never done one before. But this is for two reasons, really. One is that the Torch is going through Manchester, the Torch Relay, and we wanted to respond to that in some way. And I think we've done that comically, especially with Andrew Cotting's Swan Down. And also because the dates change for the festival. This is the first year we will be taking place a month earlier. So we really wanted to highlight that and get that into people's calendars.
The Anne Preview Weekend takes place on Friday 22nd and Saturday 23rd of June. More details can be found on the Corner House website or at andfestival.org.uk.
Corner House. Manchester's International Centre for Contemporary Visual Arts and Independent Film.
To mark the 50th anniversary of Anthony Burgess's novel A Clockwork Orange, Corner House has teamed up with the International Anthony Burgess Foundation to present a series of films influenced by Burgess's work. Podcast contributor Andy Willis rejoins us with Anthony Burgess's biographer, Andrew Biswell, to talk about Burgess's influence on filmmakers and review some of the films screening in this season.
Well, Anthony Burgess is obviously most famous as a novelist and probably most famous for the novel A Clockwork Orange, which was adapted for cinema by Stanley Kubrick. But Andrew, why a season of Burgess-related films, as he is most known as a novelist, was he someone who was particularly taken by cinema and the potential and idea of cinema?
Yeah, right through his life, Anthony Burgess was deeply influenced by film, partly through growing up in Manchester with the old silent cinema, and through his father, who was a pianist in the silent picture palaces, as they called them. So one of his earliest memories was seeing Fritz Lang's Metropolis in the 20s, and things like the old silent King Kong and Josephine Baker in Black Bottom. So right from the beginning, I mean, almost before literature, film was important to him. He was also very involved latterly in the writing of it, working with directors like Zeffirelli, obviously with Kubrick, and some of the other examples we've got in this season show up some of the more kind of obscure or less known corners of his work in the cinema.
So what's interesting then, there's this sense that he's influenced by cinema, but I think one of the things that we've tried to do with this season is also pick up on films that have been influenced by Burgess. So the season began with Metropolis, as you say, which had a big impact on him. The second film in the season is Soylent Green, which people may not be aware of the Burgess connection in terms of that film. Could you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, Burgess was hugely interested in science fiction as a reader and as a writer of it, science fiction and dystopia. And I was looking through the collection of his books in the Foundation, in our library here in Manchester. And he's got loads and loads of science fiction books, either by Harry Harrison or edited by him. And they knew each other a bit in New York. And so you get this 70s film, Soylent Green, based on a 60s novel about the future, very similar to the territory that Burgess had covered in his dystopian novel, The Wanting Seed, tackling a similar subject, overpopulation, scarce resources in the far distant future of 1999. It's nearly the year 2000 in the book. So this sort of terrifying future time. And what happened when they came to film it was they borrowed, let's say, the ending from Burgess's novel, which he found out about some years later, and much to his fury. And he writes in his memoirs about a sort of showdown with Harry Harrison, who I think knew nothing about this, and in all innocence, he came round and polished off a bottle of Burgess's whiskey, and they settled their differences that way. So this film, Soylent Green, is an odd fusion of Harrison, who Burgess had read and admired, and the Burgess novel as well. So it's like a kind of bolting together, pasting together of two, you know, very important, influential science fiction writers.
And then obviously the most well-known and probably most significant link between Anthony Burgess and cinema is Stanley Kubrick's A Clockwork Orange. But the pair worked on other projects as well, didn't they? It wasn't just the adaptation of A Clockwork Orange.
That's true. Burgess and Kubrick is quite a long story. And, well, Kubrick, as you probably know, he worked with lots of writers, people like Nabokov, Frederick Raphael, also Brian Aldiss, who was another science fiction writer, another friend of Burgess's too. But Burgess and Kubrick, post A Clockwork Orange, Kubrick wanted Burgess to write his Napoleon film, which never got made. And, in fact, there's a stage play that Burgess did write, I think with Kubrick in mind, which is going out on the radio later this year for the first time. And then in the middle 70s, Kubrick was very keen for Burgess to adapt Schnitzler, the dream novel, which eventually comes around in the late 90s as Eyes Wide Shut, with Frederick Raphael writing the script. So there's a lot of correspondence between them. I mean, they were in touch post A Clockwork Orange. Sadly, we cannot show the films that they didn't make, but the Clockwork Orange is the sort of starting point of their relationship. And you can see what would have kind of brought them together in a way, because Kubrick, very interested in classical music, as was Burgess, a composer who wrote three symphonies and about 150 other orchestral works. So the other thing that's in the season here is the French documentary, Il y était une fois l'orange mécanique, Once Upon a Time, A Clockwork Orange.
I'm glad you did the translation.
Well, forgive my French accent. And that's interesting because it's one of the collaborators on that film is Michel Simon, a French academic who was the only scholar Kubrick really trusted. And he gave him a lot of interviews for his books. And he's one of the main characters, along with various people who work with Kubrick on, well, this film in particular, A Clockwork Orange. And you've got interviews with the cast as well. It's a good film. It's a good way of kind of setting up and appreciating the film. So, yeah, there's the documentary, and then there's a rare opportunity to see A Clockwork Orange, which I've never seen projected. I've watched it on video and so forth. So I'm looking forward to watching it sort of properly in the cinema for the first time.
Yeah, I think A Clockwork Orange, I've not seen it in the cinema, and I do have a strong feeling that it's going to be one of those films that it will actually almost look like a new film when you see it in all its glory projected big, and you'll be able to kind of take in the mise-en-scène and things like this much, much more, things that Kubrick, you know, is very, very famous for. And we've also got an introduction come conversation with Peter Kramer, who's written a recent book on A Clockwork Orange and has done a lot of research in the Stanley Kubrick archive. And he'll be talking about uncovering little gems that he found in that archive. So I think there's a lot of complementary things about A Clockwork Orange, which makes it the cornerstone of this season. But the final thing that we've got on is a very rarely screened, I'll say in inverted commas, adaptation of A Clockwork Orange, which Andy Warhol did in, I believe, in a corner of the factory with a few of his friends and associates in 1965. Do you know much about that film, Andrew?
I know a bit. I've seen it before. It's described by, you know, the Warhol people, even the people who like it, describe it as 60 minutes of torture, though that's partly to do with the content. As you say, it's a very loose adaptation of A Clockwork Orange. And there are a number of factory regulars, such as Gerard Malanga, and Ron Tavel wrote the script, insofar as there was a script. There's a lot of improvisation. So it's a kind of classic, you know, as it were, experimental, avant-garde 60s film. I think it's composed of four shots, and the actors keep sort of wandering in and out of the shots. A lot of the action is improvised and quite surprising, quite shocking. I think we had to have it cleared with the city council to check that it was suitable to be screened, but they've said yes, so everything's fine. Very different from Kubrick's adaptation, but again, it's another take, and I think there's a lot about it that's still true to the spirit of the book, even though it kind of goes its own way. Yeah. After a certain point, it's very much a 60s film. I mean, the music, but also the low budgetness of it is part of its appeal and its charm. They couldn't afford credits, so you've got somebody saying them in the middle of the film. Not at the beginning of the end, just in the middle at some random point. They tell you who's in it. So I think it was exactly as you say. It was kind of filmed in a corner of the factory. And some of the earliest screenings, they used it as a sort of back projection for Velvet Underground concerts, as Warhol remembers in his memoirs. So I think it's probably the first time it's ever been projected, certainly in Manchester. I think there was a showing at the BFI about 15 years ago. It's the only other UK screening I've heard of. So a rare opportunity to see one of Warhol's more eccentric pieces of filmmaking.
Well, I have to say that description is tempting me, I have to say, to get down to see that one. And following on the next day from the screening of A Clockwork Orange, the Kubrick version, then a great opportunity to compare the two films and very different filmmaking practices. So, thanks for coming in, Andrew. Also, a big thanks to the Anthony Burgess Foundation for working with Corner House on this season of films. And we know we're only, in a sense, scratched the surface in terms of Burgess's links with cinema. There are a number of other things that aren't in this season, so maybe there'll be some more collaborations in the future.
Now it's time for the What's On Guide. Here are our tips for top cultural pursuits this June. The Library Theatre's production of Manchester Lines opened this week. Set in a lost property office on the fifth floor of No. 1 First Street, it's written by one of the country's best-known authors and poets, Jackie Kay. Here's a quick taster of what you can expect.
There's letters and there's envelopes, both sizes white and brown. We've even got a taxidermy fox wearing a crown. Cause all the stuff that ever got stuffed lost something, never fear. All the stuff that ever got stuffed, it's here. Think of it and I swear it'll appear. There's maps you can imagine that I can't go through the back and bring out here.
For more information and to buy tickets, go to librarytheatre.com/Manchester Lines. On Saturday 16th of June, the third in a series of multi-sensory walks will lead urban explorers on a search for the heart of Manchester. The walk will be led by the Loiterers Resistance Movement, and participants will produce a collaborative map of their findings. For more information, search Multisensory Walks on the Corner House website, or check out the Loiterers Resistance Movement's blog at nowhere-fest.blogspot.co.uk. Lynn Shelton's latest film, Your Sister's Sister, opens on Friday, 29th of June. Corner House Programme Administrator Rachel Salt got the chance to preview the film recently and came back with a glowing recommendation.
Director Lynn Shelton made her name back in 2009 with the bromance comedy Hump Day, which did very well here at Corner House with our audiences. Since then, she's not really done too much. She directed an episode of Mad Men, but now she's returning to the big screen with Your Sister's Sister. Definitely one for fans of American indie, this film has a great comedy tone and plays out the accuracies of friendships fraught with lust and flirtation against a somehow absurd but believable storyline. Mark Duplass, which many people will know from directing films, stars now as Jack, who's a lovable, bumbling but despondent young guy who's struggling to come to terms with the death of his brother, who happens to be the ex-boyfriend of his now best friend, Iris. Slightly complicated, but you'll get to terms with it in about 2 minutes when you start watching. Without giving away too much of the plot, Iris persuades Jack to take a break in her family's remote holiday home. So fun, or should I say a nightmare, soon ensues. What's so great about this film is its simplicity. So not that much happens, and it's such an unfussy narrative that we really get a chance to revel in the amusing and incredibly naturalistic performances from the three leads. There's an off-the-cuff style, but it's really believably self-improvised acting, and they're just fantastic performances from both, well, actually, all three of them, but particularly Emily Blunt and Mark Duplass. And you really believe that they're probably friends off-screen because the banter that they have on-screen is so fantastic. It still looks polished, even though at times you can see that things have gone a little bit awry, but the cinematic detail is fantastic for just a 12-day short shoot. It's such a heartfelt story of crisscrossing relationships that it's hard not to fall head over heels in love with this film, and audiences have done at festivals worldwide. So I'd recommend you see it now and laugh till you cry and wistfully dream of living in Seattle, and it's much better than any Euro footy or Olympics coverage you'll get on TV.
Earlier in the podcast, we talked about the Anthony Burgess and cinema season taking place at Corner House this month. If you're an Anthony Burgess superfan, check out 50 Years of A Clockwork Orange, a 3-day conference on the life, work and influence of Anthony Burgess and his seminal novel. The conference takes place from Wednesday 27th to Saturday 30th of June, and day passes are also available. Check out anthonyburgess.org for more details. Our new Corner House project, Home, is on display in the cafe and bar. It features affordable prints between £35 and £50, which have been designed, unsurprisingly, with the theme of home in mind. Here's more from Corner House Exhibitions coordinator Thomas Harold.
So Home is curated by Tash Wilcox, who's head of department at University of Salford School of Art and Design, as well as an artist and designer herself. She's done a massive call out and selected a whole range of artists that she knows herself. So the exhibition consists of nearly 30 artworks by 27 artists and a mixture of designers, illustrators, photographers and typographers, featuring not only but including Stanley Chow, Andy Vattel, Ben Lam, Tash herself, Robert Shadbolt and a whole host of others. And all of the artists have been asked to consider Manchester as their home. So they all lived here at one point or another, and they offer their own interpretations of what home means to them through their chosen mediums. And the key idea with the show is also that it's very affordable. So with home in mind, we want you to take these away with you to feather your own abode, and the prints featured will be in limited editions, made especially for Corner House. All of the artwork costs £35 as an unframed print or £50 framed in an edition of 35.
And that's all we've got time for this month. Thank you very much for joining us, and don't forget to tune in July when, amongst other things, we'll be reviewing our brand new exhibition, Stan You Can, It's Cool, I'm Good.
You've been listening to the Corner House podcast. Visit the Corner House website for listings and more.